Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Docket, presented by the San Antonio Express News and hosted by Courts and Crime reporter Elizabeth Zavala. My name is Luis Vasquez, and today we're joined by two very special guests, Judge Ron Rangel, presiding judge of the 379th State District Court. Welcome to the show, Your Honor.
Thank you, Luis. Thank you for having me.
No problem. And we're also joined by Bexar County District Attorney Joe Gonzalez. Hello. How are you doing, sir?
Good evening, and thank you for having me.
No problem. It's a pleasure to have both you gentlemen.
Thanks, Judge Ron and Joe, for being with us tonight. Since mid-March, the world has dealt with a deadly pandemic that so far in the United States has infected close to 15 million people and killed nearly 275,000. On December 3rd, for example, San Antonio and Bexar County hit levels that have not been seen since July, basically, you know, at the beginning of the month of December. And as of Wednesday, officials reported close to 760 new cases in San Antonio. And as of that day, we've lost 1,372 people from the virus in the Alamo City. So when COVID-19 came to our area in mid-March and each of you were staring at not having juries since at least the flu pandemic of 1918, things had to change. So I'd like to begin with you, Judge Rangel, in your role as administrative judge for the civil and criminal district courts. This sort of fell in your lap to try to figure out how things were going to happen. So can you tell us, first of all, where we stand today with juries in Bexar County?
Thank you, Liz. And first of all, Liz, it's always a pleasure to speak to you. Thank you for having me on here.
Likewise.
And it's also a pleasure to speak to Joe. I do have the opportunity to speak to him frequently about these kinds of issues. So as it relates to how things happen and where we stand now, currently there is an order that I signed which prohibits in-person jury trials in Bexar County through the end of this year. We're analyzing now, when I say we, I mean myself and the judges, all the judges, and that's county court at law judges and civil, criminal, and juvenile district court judges, as to when it would be appropriate to send out summons to begin jury trials. I don't think this is the right time, obviously, for lots of different reasons. And so currently, if folks agree to have a virtual jury trial through Zoom, they have the ability to do that. And that's the two sides. On the criminal side, that would be the state of Texas. It's represented by Joe Gonzalez in the district attorney's office, and the defense. On the civil side, it's the two parties that are opposing each other in particular trials. In-person jury trials are prohibited. There is a plan, which I was required to submit to Regional Administrative Judge Sid Hara, who approved the plan, submitted it to the Texas Supreme Court. And so we do have an opportunity to begin jury trials in Bexar County, but not until we believe it's appropriate to do so. Now, part of the responsibilities that I have is to consult with the local health authority. Here in Bexar County, that is Metro Health. I speak to them frequently. I actually do have a meeting with a doctor from Metro Health today after this podcast, and we discuss when it's appropriate to have jury trials. One of the benchmarks that we have is that we should not begin jury trials unless we're at a positivity rate locally in Bexar County at 5% or less. We're now at 9.2%. That is one benchmark. There are other aspects of the local health factors that I do consider as it relates to having jury trials. For instance, there was one week about a month ago where we did fall below that 5%. I think we were 4.8% for a week. There were some judges that then contacted me and said, hey, you know, we're below 5%. What do you think? And the idea there, of course, was, well, it's one week. We kind of look at the other factors, and the other local health factors did point to the direction going upward in the near future, which they did in fact do. So we're looking at things like holidays. We're looking at things when school opens. So that's kind of where we're at now.
Yes, and you know, it's just I believe in watching one of the briefings that Mayor Nuremberg had said, you know, we're going in the wrong direction. Gosh, you know, the process of suspending juries and discussing a plan to begin hearing cases in the Justice Center had to be difficult. What was that like for you, Judge Runghill?
It was difficult because, well, especially back in March, summons go out every single week. We bring in about 2,500 folks a week into the Bexar County Courthouse for jury service. And so when you look at the number of summons that have to go out, I think we send out something like 4,000 in order to get that yield that we need to have jury trials in Bexar County. We have 27 district courts. We have 15 county courts of law. We have two probate courts. And some of the jurors that we use also go out to the justices of the peace. And so that's a significant number of summons that go out. And it does cost the community a lot of money. It is costly to do that in terms of manpower and in terms of the actual expense of sending those summons out. And so when the pandemic hit and things started to shut down around us, there was an issue that I was confronted with. As the local administrative judge, I do have the obligation to make these types of choices. And so I think we went to the media and we did try to get the word out as much as possible that if any individual received a summons, that they could basically, they were not obligated to follow through on the summons. They would disregard them. And that in and of itself is a tall order, because when we send out summons, we want folks to feel confident in the system that when they receive a summons, it's something that they need to comply with. And so to sort of send those summons out and all of a sudden say, stop, you're not obligated to come in is an issue. And obviously I did feel that weight. You know, there was a moment I do recall looking in the mirror and sort of telling myself, if I'm the one who's going to be responsible for making these types of choices in the community, I want to make sure that I can sleep at night. I look at myself. I never want to feel responsible for anybody that comes in and says, you compelled me to come in. You forced me to come in. And as a result of that, I got sick. And then I took it home to somebody that I love, maybe an elderly parent or a child. And as a result of that, something bad happened in that household. So, you know, judges in general feel the weight of the public safety issue. And that's really what our obligation is more than anything else, is to make sure that we keep the community safe. So focusing on public safety and then bringing in the health factors is all a part of that. You know, just like it's not appropriate to let an individual who is not considered to be safe out in the community, it's not appropriate either to cause some sort of a dangerous circumstance where folks in our community would be exposed to. So I did feel the weight of that, and I still feel that now. There's a lot of discussion amongst the judges and amongst other folks at the courthouse as to when these things would be appropriate to start. And, you know, I do feel the pressure from different members of the judiciary to try different things. So it is something that is weighty, but it's something that I take seriously. And it's something I think all the judges do.
Yes. Yeah. I can't even imagine. Well, I'm going to ask you that question as well, Joe. I mean, at the time when you realized that the juries were going to be suspended and there was a plan that needed to be hatched to start hearing these cases in the Justice Center, what was that like for you?
Well, first, you got to remember the backdrop of what it was like for me when I first took office in January of 2019. For before that, for about 20 years or so, I was a solo practitioner. I was responsible for supervising never more than three or four people. And walking into an office where I had to supervise over 500 people was quite a challenge. And I knew that I was going to encounter whatever administrative headaches come along with managing an office of 500 people. I remember telling me, you're going to supervise the largest public law firm in town. But never did I imagine that I would be responsible for the health of those people in a situation like this during the pandemic. So you can imagine the stress level that I felt early March when I was aware that this potentially could be something that would lead to multiple people in our office contracting COVID-19. So I had to make a decision, and I don't regret making that decision. And that was that early on, I decided to allow the majority of our people to work from home. Fortunately, most of our employees have laptops and they have the ability to work at home. And so a lot of those people were then asked to not come into the office, not come in and risk picking up the virus, not spreading it if they happen to have it. By the way, I'm proud to say that with the efforts that we have undertaken with an office of over 500, we still are at about 5% of people that have tested positive. And I think that's due in large part to the fact that we tried to get ahead of this early March. And so because of that, it has changed the way that we do business because the majority of our people had to work from home, had to take their laptops with them. That meant that whatever the productivity that they were used to was going to slow down, right? Because they're not at their office. They don't have the ability to just pick up a file and go from their office to the courtroom. Now they're at home. So they have to think of different ways to do their job. And one of those has been, thank God, for the existence of Zoom, because we've been able to conduct hearings because we all have worked together, the courts, the judges themselves, the people over at the jail, the sheriff's office, witnesses that have had to be available for these hearings. We've all worked together to try and keep the wheels of justice moving. But that certainly was a huge challenge for our office. And so we continue to do that. We have tried to also be creative about who we ask to come into the office, because not everybody has the ability to do their job at home. We have a certain segment of our employees that have to scan the files. When law enforcement brings us a file, we have to scan it into the computer system. That has to be done manually, and that has to be done at the office. So those people have to come to work. And so I'm sure a lot of them were thinking, well, why do I have to come in? Why do I have to risk being possibly exposed? But that prosecutor or that paralegal gets to stay home and work on their computer. Again, the reality is there are some people, and then we call them essential workers. They had to come to work. And so we were, again, creative about how we did that. We went to a flex schedule where we went maybe 3 days on, 2 days off. We toyed with other ways to avoid interaction. We ordered the plexiglass dividers. I imposed office policies requiring masks anytime they came into work. Anytime they left, they had to have their masks. When they went from their office to another office, when they walked down the hall, they had to wear their masks. I insisted on social distancing. So all those measures that we've put in place, I think, is the reason that we've kept the number of positive people that have contracted COVID down in such a huge office, but continues to be a challenge. We'll do what we have to do. But again, we're fortunate that the Commissioner's Court, for example, have been encouraging us to work remotely because they want to make sure that we keep the numbers down. And so they're allowing us to work from home. So we certainly appreciate them working with us and allowing us to do our job and allowing me to keep my employees as safe and as healthy as we can during this time.
That's good. Those are all really good precautions to take. Both of you have taken some good precautions in your preparation of how things are going to be proceeding in the courthouse. So let's switch a little bit and talk about the defendants. And Joe, I'm gonna give you a two-pronged question for you. You mentioned that you were a defense attorney for a very long time before you were elected district attorney 2 years ago. So what issues do defendants awaiting their day in court face right now because of the pandemic? And essentially, what would a defense attorney be feeling about their clients about now?
All right. I'm going to have to remove myself now from the elected DA and let's And hypothetically, I'm going to put on my former defense lawyer hat.
Okay.
And the arguments I would make, obviously, whenever an accused is brought into the system, I mean, there's either an arrest on outside arrest or a case is filed and he's required to make bond to be released from jail. At that point, the system, the process starts. And in a lot of ways, the accused, his or her life is on hold, right? They can't really move forward without some resolution in their case. If for example, if they have a good job and they're accused of a crime, especially if it's a crime that has some stigma, let's say domestic violence, anybody who's accused of a crime of violence, anybody that's accused of a crime involving a weapon, that's a kind of offense that sticks with you and can affect your employment. Somebody, let's say, that's going to school, that's got college scholarships or loans, that might impact that. So a person that's accused of a crime has to wait for a resolution of his case. And you know the old adage, justice delayed is justice denied. And so in a situation like this, where someone can't get a final resolution, it may greatly impact his life. It may keep from being promoted in his job. It may keep him from continuing with school. It may keep him from staying in the housing that he or she is in. So there are a lot of what are called collateral consequences to being charged with a crime. Then you have the issue of everyone that's accused of a crime has a constitutional right to a speedy trial. And so as a defense lawyer, you want to make sure that you're protecting your client's rights. And so defense lawyers have an obligation to ensure that their clients get justice as soon as possible. So I'm sure a lot of them, if they haven't already, are thinking about filing motions for speedy trial to get some resolution during this time. Again, this is a new situation for a lot of us. Many of us have never been in anything like this. But again, I think that if you're a defense lawyer, you've got to be thinking about protecting your client's rights. If you're a defendant, you've got to be thinking, I want my case over with. I want some resolution so that I can go on with my life.
Okay. So now I'm going to ask you to put your prosecutor cap back on.
Okay.
So what concerns do you and your office have now because of the fact that because of the pandemic and the issues regarding safety that no juries have been seated, of course, except for the grand juries. But we really haven't had a traditional trial in almost 9 months.
Right. And there's certainly some problems with going into a jury trial in a non-traditional setting, even a virtual setting. And we can talk about that in a minute. But let me tell you from the state's perspective, what my concerns are about delaying justice. Because likewise, when you're delaying justice, you're denying a victim of crime his or her day in court. You're denying the victim of crime the justice that they deserve. And so there's a real issue with someone who is a victim now. Let's say, let's go back to the domestic violence situation. Let's say someone is a victim of domestic violence. So what does she do? Does she continue to live with the perpetrator? Does she continue in that situation where she fears that he, and I'm saying you, if it's a male, that he may come back to the home, he may yet again commit a crime of domestic violence. Someone who's a victim of a more serious crime, does that person fear that while that person is out on the street instead of in prison, that they may be victimized again? So that's one concern. The other concern we have is the more time goes by, the greater the likelihood that we'll lose that potential witness in a case, or not potential, that witness is already identified, but the opportunity for that witness to come into court to testify, we may lose that victim. If that victim says, you know what, I'm tired of waiting, it's taking too long, forget it, I don't want to go to court. I just want to go on with my life. So there's that concern. So it's obviously in the best interest of crimes of victim to get back to business and to get a resolution as soon as possible. And that's why I think that we're all trying to be as creative as possible about coming up with different solutions, different alternatives to the traditional jury trial setting.
Yes, yes. And on that, Judge Rangel, in the process of you working with people at the courthouse on, you know, possibilities of you know, maybe getting back to a next normal, not even a normal or a new normal, but the next normal. The offices and courtrooms have been retrofitted so that people inside these rooms can be safe. Can you talk about what the courtrooms are like now and what some of these things are that have been put in place for safety purposes and what someone going to the courthouse might see if they hadn't been there for a while?
Yes. Well, the first thing is before anybody gets to the courthouse, we recognize that there are members of the community that are considered to be in the vulnerable populations. Those are individuals that are over the age of 65 or maybe folks that have serious underlying health conditions like high blood pressure, maybe some type of asthma, obesity, maybe they've been immunocompromised by chemotherapy that they've had to go through. And so if you're an individual that has to come to court, if you're an employee of the courthouse, if you're a witness maybe, anybody who basically says, I don't feel safe at the courthouse, will have an excuse not to come to the courthouse. And no judge or no court is going to hold that against them for making that decision based on that purpose. And so when they get to the courthouse, the first thing they'll do is they'll be screened. And so the courthouse staff has been trained to screen all individuals. Anybody who hits a threshold of 100 degrees will be required to be turned away, so they cannot come into the courthouse. They'll be asked a series of COVID questions. The standard questions, have you had fever? Have you been exposed to anybody with COVID? That type of thing. When they get into the courthouse after they've been screened, they'll notice that there are hand sanitizer dispensers all over the place. And that includes the elevator, outside the elevators, outside the courtrooms, outside the chambers, in the hallways. And so there are some flyers that are all over the courthouse that sort of explain how germs spread and the importance of following important hygiene, which includes using the hand sanitizers. As they get into the courthouse, then they'll recognize that there are markings that require folks who are not part of the same family unit to be more than 6 feet apart, which includes the elevators. Each elevator has been marked in the courthouse, which includes the bathrooms. All the courtrooms have a certain number outside the courtrooms, which say, this is the maximum number of folks that could come into the courthouse. When they get into the courtrooms, they'll see some stanchions, you know, the movie theater things that you see with the poles and then the strip that goes across them, which is interesting, right? It keeps them more than 6 feet away from the counters where the clerks are at, keeps them more than 6 feet away from the benches. There's also the plexiglass shields that we have up, which protects members of the community and folks that work at the courthouse from each other. They have to have face coverings when they enter the building. If they don't have one, a disposable one will be provided to them. And so depending on the circumstances, they should wear those face coverings the entire time that they are in the courthouse. There's a lot of other things that they'll see. The courthouse is very sparse. There are some courts. We did do a plan. I did a plan which does allow certain criminal courts to have hearings, in-person hearings, but there can only be a limited number of folks. You'll see a lot more computers because most of the hearings are done by Zoom on the computer. And so judges come into the courthouse, they sit at their desk, they're looking at the computer, and rather than go up and down to go back and forth to court, they'll be in front of the computer. For whatever reason, there are some folks that have hearings that we deem to be necessary hearings where an in-person proceeding must take place. And those are kind of rare, but those are taking place. On the civil side, there are no in-court proceedings based on the kind of issues that they handle. And so it is a different experience. It feels kind of like a ghost town. It does feel weird. We just opened up the cafeteria downstairs for folks to eat at, but they're not allowed to actually eat there. They can only call in or walk down and order something and then take it back to where they work. And that's mainly for the folks that work at the courthouse. Most of the courthouse restaurants around the courthouse have closed. It's a different experience. It kind of feels like a ghost town.
Right. I know the times that I have been there, there's plenty of room, shall we say, and it is kind of lonely, it seems like.
Sorry, Elizabeth. Sorry, can I ask a quick question?
Sure.
Well, we're talking about all the precautions that we're taking moving forward. Last week, Elizabeth, we talked about a handful of the really high profile cases that were supposed to be going on in 2020, but, you know, have been pushed. And so moving, we got to talking about how the courts are caught in between a rock and a hard place, where you want these juries to be in person because you want them attentive. You maybe don't want them researching the case on their own. The advent of technology has helped a lot, but there are limitations. I just wanted to hear you guys' musings on that, and if technology has helped or if it's not helping as much as it should have helped.
Well, Joe, if you want to go first, I'll let you do that.
Well, I mean, especially with the high profile cases, we need to have some resolution, just like I mentioned during that interview that you had with me, Elizabeth, that this situation is not sustainable for over a long period of time. At some point, let's say hypothetically that we were going to be in this status for another year. Let's say we didn't have the vaccines looming in the horizon, and we had another year to expect of this. We would have to come to some decision to move these high profile cases forward. I have in the past said that I don't think that it's a good idea to have criminal jury trials via Zoom. I would prefer to do it in a socially distanced environment for those reasons that you mentioned, Luis. If you're sitting in a room by yourself and you're a juror, there's nothing to prevent you from reaching into your pocket and doing research on your iPhone. There's nothing to prevent you from engaging in some kind of communication with your buddy and ask, hey, what about this or what about that? Go find out about this other issue. That's part of the problem. There's a lot of logistical challenges with having a criminal jury trial via Zoom. I think a better idea, and Judge Rangel and I have chatted about this, if we ever had to be in a situation where we would have to conduct a criminal jury trial, a better solution in my mind would be to conduct it kind of like what's going on right now with the McCain case, where my team, as well as the defense and the judge, are conducting individual jury selection in a large setting where you can socially distance, where you can have the plexiglass, and where you can still have witnesses come in person. And with a lot of times, the witnesses on the state side bring evidence with them, as opposed to doing it virtually. So I think there's a way to do that, even in a socially distanced environment. But I do believe that we do have to think about bringing those cases to trial at some point.
Judge?
We talked about constitutional issues, and so speedy trial issues are very important, and other constitutional issues that relate to jury trials are very important. Part of that is a trigger. If a case is lasting more than a certain period of time, then there are issues that come into play, but it's not the only characteristic that is required in analyzing what a speedy trial issue is. There are other factors that come into play. And so because of the emergency circumstance that we're under now, which is the pandemic, it does sort of alter the scale just a little bit in terms of how long we can go before there is some sort of a constitutional violation. As it relates to technology, I think that it's good and bad. There are certain aspects of the court system that I can see, and Joe and I have discussed this, that we can see that has been improved as a result of the pandemic in terms of how we handle things virtually. But the issue with criminal type cases is that everything is based on how credible we think a piece of evidence is. And so somebody testifying, that is a piece of evidence. And so in order to analyze that, it's important to be able to look at somebody as a person. When I'm looking at a defendant or when I'm looking at a witness trying to gauge what type of person we're dealing with, what kind of heart we're dealing with on a defendant, it's important to do more than just be able to view them from a computer screen. Humans are much more than a dimension. We are so multifaceted in the ways that we communicate and in the ways that we show feelings and expressions that there's just so much that's lost when you're doing things through technology. And so even though technology is a wonderful thing, there is something about the court system and dealing with criminal type cases that we just are not going to be able to get past. It is a human thing. It's a human endeavor that we deal with every day when we're dealing with these kinds of cases. And so as such, it's important that we never lose fact that we're dealing with real human lives and real people. And so apart from that, sort of to add on what Joe was saying, to give people the opportunity to look up things without being able to see them and watch them do things is an issue. I mean, we don't know if there is some sort of very personal issue that's coming out on a computer screen where somebody could be taking a photograph of that and sharing that with folks. There are really sensitive issues that we deal with in the justice system. And we don't want to trigger certain emotions or feelings from anybody in the general public based on things that maybe should not be shared as easily, right? I mean, people have the right. Every court hearing, according to the Constitution, must be an open process. People in the community have the right to come into the courthouse or look on the Zoom proceedings through a process online and observe what's going on. We want to make sure that all proceedings are open to the public. But at the same time, there still has to be a certain level of respect that we give to the system to make sure that folks do have a certain semblance of privacy as it relates to what's going on.
I absolutely agree.
This has been really enlightening, Judge Rangel and District Attorney Joe Gonzalez. I thank you both again for letting our listeners know and the people of Bexar County know what is going on. And I'm sure that we will be discussing this again for print in the San Antonio Express News. I'm going to turn us over to Luis.
Thank you for joining us on another episode of The Docket, hosted by Courts and Crime reporter Elizabeth Zavala. Today, you heard Judge Ron Rangel of the 379th State District Court and Bexar County District Attorney Joe Gonzalez. Be sure to tune in next week for another episode of The Docket. Also, be sure to rate and review the podcast inside of your Apple Podcast app, as it really helps the show. Have a wonderful day, everyone.